The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, welcome to this interview episode. Today on the line, I have Sam Johnson, the creator of Geek Girl. Anybody that's listened to our show for, you know, a while has probably heard Sam before, and, you know, we love having him on the show to talk about his, like, ongoing, you know, magnum opus, as it were, you know, just getting ready to release new material, and we wanted to have him on again so he could talk to you guys about some exciting stuff that he's got going on. Sam, welcome to the show. How are you today, man?
I'm good. Thank you for having me back. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Coming off of a little bit of a cold, so if I sound a little nasal.
Yeah, I'm the same. I think everyone's been, just about everyone's been hit with that. My best friend's got it at the moment.
Oh, man. It's the worst, but we power through it.
We do. We struggle on.
So, for anybody that's maybe newer to the show and hasn't, you know, heard this yet, can you give us a quick rundown of just kind of the basic plot line of Geek Girl?
Okay, so Geek Girl initially was a hot, popular college chick, Ruby Kay, who on a whim landed these super tech glasses that they've got a chip in them that instill her with super strength and flight powers. The initial thing with these was when she was trying to sort of impress a cool kid clique with them, she kind of made a fool of herself, knocking drinks over them and so forth, alienating them with the exception of Summer, her BFF. Ruby kind of grew and stepped up and became the superheroine, took Lightning Storm, who was a big bad, trying to take down points of authority where they live in Maine. She did take down Lightning Storm, but ended up electrocuted and put in a coma. Summer stepped in to fill in as Geek Girl in the interim and wasn't great at it. Ruby is now back out of the coma. That, I think, brings us right up to issue 4, which is the one that is out this week.
And as we move forward into issue 4, there's new enemies and, like, new challenges that she has to overcome, including specifically in issue 4, Hangover, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
So yeah. Tell us a little bit about the direction that the book is going and kind of some of the stuff that you're doing, you know, around the release of issue 4.
Okay, so yeah, it's part of Geek Girl Week, which has begun on the 28th today. And I'm going to be putting out new Geek Girl stuff throughout the week, starting with this interview. And then we've got on the 29th, there's new Geek Girl stuff coming on to Indiegogo, where you'll be able to get, there's some limited black variants, super limited, only 50 of these for each of the four issues of the current series, which come poly-bagged. And then on Wednesday, we've got Geek Girl 4 coming out. And there's going to be more stuff coming throughout the week. There's a Geek Girl Facebook group, Geek Girl Comic Facebook group, so that's a good place to go to get the rest of that. Also, the Geek Girl mailing list at geekgirlcomics.com. So, yeah, there's more stuff to come throughout the week, but the sort of focal point of it is the new Geek Girl 4.
Oh, that's awesome. So tell me a little bit about, like, the variant covers and the process that you went through to do that.
Well, we've got sort of signaling Ruby's return to being Geek Girl because, as I say, we've had Summer filling in up until the last issue. We've got a very beautifully painted limited variant by Eric. I always have to be careful how I pronounce his name so it doesn't sound like Cartman off of South Park. Eric Hartman. Yeah, very nice, beautiful limited cover there. And we've also got the main cover is what's been going on throughout this series is after the damage Lightning Storm did to Maine's law enforcement, hospitalizing superheroes, Ruby included, and taking out police stations. We've had this group called the League of Larcenists who've been pulling bank jobs using super tech, including a teleportation device and big gun cable-style blasters. And yeah, they've been growing in number and growing in name. And by the time we get to issue 4, they're now the Legion of Larcenists. So a quite formidable force. And Neon Girl, who was the resident superheroine of Maine, who also got hospitalized by Lightning Storm, is now back. And she's got a cybernetic hand. And she means business, and she wants Ruby back in costume to help her take down the now Legion of Larcenists.
So as like the action is kind of ramping up through the second volume, what are some things that we can like look forward to as far as like, you know, team ups with other heroes and like, you know, the growing threat of the Legion of Larcenists?
Well, one thing that's one character that gets introduced into this issue is a guy called Tyler, who there's not too much that can be said about them before you read the issue because it would be a bit spoilery. But this guy is going to be playing a significant role, and he's come in as part of the Legion of Larcenists and is among those that there's kind of mutiny growing in their ranks, because the guy that runs the show, Pighead, who's this guy who's had his brain fused with the pigs, he's quite an aggressive character, and he can be quite disparaging. Terry, the guy that came on board earlier in the game, got saddled when they were doling out codenames. He got saddled with the name Numbnuts because he'd had a vasectomy, and also because Pighead wasn't a big fan. And Tyler is now on board, and a slightly larger gentleman, he's been labeled with the name KFC. So these don't go down particularly well. And another fly in the Legion's ointment is this robot called Chromex, who's kind of fallen in with them due to circumstances without sort of officially wanting to sign up. And he's forming an alliance with Terry, and they're kind of thinking, do we want to be sticking with these guys, or should we be going our own way?
That's awesome. So as all good supervillain groups fall apart through dissension in the ranks, you know?
Yeah, but we've got there's that going on, but the main thing of issue 4 is going to be quite a kick-ass fight, primarily with Geek Girl and Neon Girl taking on the more together component of the Legion, headed off by Pighead and his big gun.
And his big pig head.
his big pig head indeed.
So when you're kind of plotting out like the full run, obviously you have the whole story in mind. Tell me a little bit about the process of taking it from like script to like, you know, art and comic and all of that.
Well, I had a very definite character arc, a character development arc in mind for the first miniseries, of which we're on the second now. And then what's been going on in the second was it was a character arc of Summer as Geek Girl, which ran basically from issues 1 to 3. And then we're kind of into a new thing here with issue 4 with Ruby back in the costume. Something I've been gradually bringing in is some story ideas I had from quite some time ago that I've been wanting to introduce. I've started into my sort of comics universe. I've been introducing with Johnny Carlisle, who came in, I think, in issue 2, who's a kind of dodgy power broker who the League of Larcenists may or may not have got their equipment from. So he's possibly being a little bit indiscriminate on who he's letting these weapons out to. But he's in the mix now, and he's gets a bit of a talking to from Neon Girl, who generally seems to be pissed off anyway, but is kind of suspicious about where the League have got this tech from. So he supplied Neon Girl with her a cybernetic hand. So she's kind of gives him a bit of a dressing down about how he's going to be, you know, vetting who he gives this powerful equipment to in future. And this kind of plants an idea in his head about possibly going in a new direction. And that is where a lot of things I've kind of written back in the day that, as I say, I'm meant to introduce into my comics world. He's going to be kind of the catalyst for bringing those into the world of Geek Girl. And I've got some weird and wonderful things coming there.
That's awesome. Like, it, you know, it's cool to watch like this evolving, you know, ecosystem of superheroes and villains and just kind of all sorts of different things happening. When you when you were looking to get the art done, you know, I know that the process can be pretty simple now with like the internet and being able to reach out to people all over the world. Was it pretty, or has it continued to be fairly seamless with the art and all of those aspects of the production of the comic?
Well, it took a long time to get the right artist on in Carlos, because the artist needs to be able to, for starters, there's a large female cast of differing personalities, and it's very important that when you look at these, if we're thinking specifically, particularly about Ruby and Summer and their group of girlfriends, that they all look distinctive, and it's not just they all look the same with different hair color. And Carlos brings, obviously they do look distinctive, but also the body language Carlos brings to the characters is great. And, you know, there's a lot of attractive females. He's got to be able to draw attractive females. So it did take some time to get the right artist in Carlos. And because, thankfully, everyone involved, from Carlos to Chun Lin Zhao, the colorist, to Paul McLaren, the letterer, everyone's really into the series. So we had a couple of people helping out on a couple of issues in the first series, but other than that, this has been the team, and everyone's signed on for the next arc. So it wasn't easy to get that right, but that is, as I say, that's a lot to do with, you know, a very particular skill set being required to draw this series and to do it right, and on top of what I've said, obviously also to be able to do good action.
Right. He's like the Liam Neeson of comic book artists. He's got a very specific skill set.
Yeah, and he'll hunt you down and kill you. So don't
piss him off. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very intense for a comic book artist.
It is, yeah. But the thing is that he's also a massive, I hope he at some point gets a shot at Superman, because he's the biggest Superman fan. He's been on his Facebook, Carlos Grande is his full name. He's been doing a Superman month where he's managed to, I think, wear a different Superman t-shirt every day of the month, which, oh, wow. I think, if you do that, I think you're a bit of a Superman fan, aren't you? Right.
I don't think I own a single Superman t-shirt, but
I've got one. But yes, certainly 30 is a good going. That's
pretty impressive.
just having 30, you know, I mean, they're all basically the Superman logo, but he has actually got 30 different variations of that. So that in itself is quite.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So, When you're looking at putting together Geek Girl Month, like, this is a really cool idea to me. You know, you're releasing a bunch of different stuff. You know, you're going to have all sorts of things going on, or Geek Girl Week. Sorry, not month. I got distracted by the 30 t-shirts. Well, it's
the whole Superman thing, yeah.
So when you do the Geek Girl Month, like, what kind of inspired you to, or week, I gotta stop saying month, what inspired you to do a whole week of stuff to celebrate the release of the issue?
Well, it's nice to kind of make an event of it, and this is kind of a sort of new chapter starting here, because, as I say, we had Summer's arc, which I think plays out very satisfactorily in the way it's concluded for issues 1 to 3 of this series. This is Ruby back in costume, so that's a good jump on point. And also it's having, you know, I've got stuff to be able to do that. Like, as I say, we've got the black variants coming out, available on Indiegogo the 29th. The book comes out the 30th. Cabracini Voodoo Junkie Hit Woman is going to be coming into the series as part of the weird and wonderful stuff I mentioned earlier. Carver is the ex crack whore turned supernatural gun for hire, and there's a free digital comic for her, so that's available on Drive Through Comics, Cabracini, Cini is spelled, Cab, I'll give you the full spelling, C-A-B-R-A-C-I-N-I. So that's available there already on Drive Through Comics, but I'm going to be doing a sort of one of the days is going to be a big feature on Cab, and I'm making that book available again. And yeah, we've got announcements to come. So there's stuff to kind of justify making it a week-long event.
It's awesome that you're creating like a whole universe. Like it's not just this one, you know, it, right now it's the one title is pulling together like all these different ideas that you have. Like what kind of drove you to create like an expanded universe on the back of this story?
Well, the Cabra thing was already there. One of the things I love about comics is having that sort of crossover and shared universe thing. So originally, Cabra's miniseries was going to have come out before this, but I decided to shelve that and introduce her into Geek Girl first so that more people will be aware of her ahead of that coming out. So that was, yeah, that was kind of already created, but with the way things develop with Geek Girl, which, as I say, these ideas that I've had weren't when I started Geek Girl. I didn't think to bring these ideas into it, and it's all going to integrate nicely. And this character Tyler sort of spins out of these other ideas I've had. So it's kind of evolved that I've had these things there already. It's not like I've set out to create this universe and then create loads of characters that will spin off into their own books and that kind of thing. It's organic, but I've had a lot of stuff sort of in the bank, right, waiting for the right venue. Because whenever it's come up about me doing crossovers, it's never been like I want to just do a Cabra versus Geek Girl thing sort of for the sake of it. And what actually connects Cabra to Geek Girl's universe and brings her into it isn't actually directly Geek Girl. So it's, as I say, it's kind of evolved by bringing these different elements in, which has begun with Johnny Carlisle, the Power Broker.
Nice. It's cool. Like it's cool how organic it's all kind of coming together and making this, you know, shared universe. I love world building. Like, you know, I love to DM Dungeons and Dragons. And one of my favorite things is that creation of like the world that they're living in. It's so much fun to do. And it sounds like you're having a really good time doing it on your end too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I really liked about the first issue of the current series when Ruby was in the coma, we got the chance to spend more time on the supporting characters. As they Summer took the spotlight, we had Pitbull the jock superhero taking her under his wing to train her up, and I was very pleased that things had been built up enough that we could have a solid issue in which the lead character doesn't even get a line.
Right. That's awesome. Like that's a really cool thing. So we've had, you know, return guests on and stuff, but I think there's not really been anybody that's been on the show like quite as consistently and quite, you know, from beginning of project to now. And one thing I've never really had a chance to ask anybody is overall, like, what has the fan response been like? Like, what are readers saying to you? Like, what are people excited about? You know, I guess I've never just had the opportunity to say, what's it like? Like, what's the public feedback like?
It's been great. I mean, it's been building nicely. I mean, basically, what I wanted to do was get to the point where I can justify the series going, which we have. And one thing I've found is, I think partly because of having kind of established this world by the end of the first miniseries, and as I say, that kind of being its own entity in the second, I don't know. It's like, I think you can easily come in the second miniseries. You can come in the new issue 4, and it does feel like you have entered this world. It does feel like kind of established now. And the characterization, you know, having spent time developing these characters, there, you know, we can see more to them, and they're more fleshed out. And the second miniseries has been the best reviewed of anything I've done. And another thing that I really like about it is, like, I made it clear that when Summer took over as Geek Girl, she wasn't going to be a legacy hero. It wasn't going to be, right, that's, you know, this is Nat from now on for the foreseeable future. It's going to be Summer as Geek Girl. That wasn't it. She was always filling in and just sort of doing the best she can. She didn't have the propensity for it that Ruby does. But she was, though she wasn't good as a superhero, practically, she was very lovable and endearing in the role. And when I put out a poll at the Geek Girl Comic Facebook group before we've got to this point, before I've revealed that Ruby is coming back in the costume, we did a poll about who without knowing what's going to be coming up in issue four, about who the people in the group would most like to see take a big role in the new issue. And Geek Girl Ruby and Geek Girl Summer were pretty much almost neck and neck, Ruby only just pipping her. So it's great that, you know, people embrace Summer in as the sort of temporary Geek Girl and really enjoyed her in that role.
That's awesome. Like, it's got to be really satisfying to have your creation, you know, strike a chord with people and they get excited about what's going to come next.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Summer and Ruby's relationship has always been the heart of the series. And I think, you know, I try and make it real, and like the conflict that they've had between themselves, with each other through this series has been, I think, very real. Like when Ruby came out of the coma, she didn't know Summer was filling in for her as Geek Girl. So she's got home, well, she's at a folk, she's staying there recovering. And then Summer's called her up on the cell phone, eager to see her. Ruby doesn't know anything about what's going on with Summer as Geek Girl. So Summer opens the door and finds Geek Girl standing in the costume. Now, for Summer's point of view, it was like, you know, I've got your back here, Ruby. I'm filling in for you. From Ruby's point of view, it's, well, I've just been hospitalized by putting myself out there as Geek Girl, and now you've shown up wearing my costume. What's that about? So I hope you could see sort of both sides, and that conflict is, it causes a rift at first, but when Ruby gets that Summer only had the best intentions, they fix things and the relationship is deeper than it was. Hence the hangover we touched on at the start. Right. There it is. Beginning of issue four is Ruby and Summer have just been cementing their friendship and have been out on the town getting drunk. So when Ruby is called on to join Neon Girl to try and stop the Legion of Larcenus, she's somewhat worse for wear and possibly not in the best state to be doing it.
You know, it's one of the funniest parts in the issue. You know, you were gracious enough to provide us with a review copy, and it gave me a chuckle, and I had just woken up, so that's a good thing.
Cool. I like Neon Girl's reaction to it when she finds out, because Neon Girl is very, you know, serious, we need to kick these guys' asses, so she wouldn't really expect a partner, in inverted commas, to turn up.
Right.
Would turn up in a state in which she'd rather just be lying in bed, really.
That's awesome. Oh, man. So, Sam, as we, you know, kind of draw to a close here, let all of our listeners know where they can find the book, like where they can find more information about Geek Girl Week, like all of that stuff, man.
Yeah, well, geekgirlcomics.com, the landing page of that's got a thing you can join up to the mail list. So if you join that, then you'll be getting all the stuff about Geek Girl Week as it hits. You also get a free digital preview comic when you join that. Geek Girl Comic Facebook group is a good one for more previews and stuff. And from Tuesday the 29th of January, the black limited variants will be available at Indiegogo as well as issue four, which goes on general release on Wednesday the 30th.
That's awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for coming back on the show and like just sharing your creation with us. Like, I've enjoyed like reading this comic, you know, and I'm on the show. I'm like an avowed not fan of superheroes. You know, it's not really something I read a ton of, but this one not only sparks my interest, but it gives me a chuckle like on the regular. So I love reading this book, and I can't recommend it you know, any higher to our listeners, man. I really enjoy it. Thank you for keeping us in the loop and keeping us, you know, keeping us a part of your campaign to get more people to read Geek Girl.
Well, thank you. I'm glad the creative team really enjoyed doing it. And I'm glad that that's translating to the readers.
It is like it's just a genuinely fun book to read. And like, I think personally for me, that's my problem a lot of the time with superhero books is they're not throwing anything super inventive at me, and they're not like entertaining me in the way that I'm expecting, because it all seems stale, and this doesn't. Like, it seems like a pretty fresh and fun way of taking a superhero to a higher and maybe a tad bit hungover level. So thanks, man.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Awesome, Sam. Well, you have a great rest of your day and good luck with issue 4, man. I hope it sells like hotcakes.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast, Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barron Space production.